on time to talk sports with raw mind. Game day, who plays with updates of all kinds? From press box to sideline, who got cut, who got signed? Who's clutch when it's crunch time? The starting lineup or the pine? These athletes compete some without even trying. You want a championship, you gotta grind. When them bright lights shine and this game go nine, they gon' cover the story, not quite like Ryan. Exclusive interviews, dudes plug like Mike Line. He's got the inside scoop of why who got fined. Prime time, got the game statistics. I could say, if you wasn't at the game, you missed it. But now Raw Mind Sports covers the distance. Front row, that's close like a coach's assistant. You wanna be in the know? Eyes open and listen. This is Raw Mind Sports, another edition.
Welcome to Raw Mind Sports. I'm your host, Ryan Jones. I'm here tonight, today, whatever time you're looking at me, with my guy, Brandon McKelvey, out of Texas. He's going to give you his remarkable story. It's a unique journey, a little different, but it's very unique. So, Brandon, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing good, Ryan. How are you?
I'm doing well, man. I'm doing well. So, let's talk about your unique journey. I know you're from Texas, so kind of tell the viewers where you're from, you know, how did you grow up loving the game of basketball?
So, I was born September 10th, 1994 in Summit, New Jersey. I was actually born in New Jersey. Lived there for about a year and a half. Then we actually lived in Australia, Melbourne, Australia, for about 3 years.
Oh,
what? Job out there. My dad worked for ExxonMobil for about 33 years. And so he had a job out there in Australia, and then that's when we moved to Houston. I was about 3 or 4 years old. We moved to Houston, and so I lived there from about 99 to 02. Then my family's resided in the Dallas-Fort Worth area since 2002 up until now, so still live here. I've been all over the place. My journey has taken me to different states, different countries, so definitely got a unique background, but you know, I've been blessed to have some good opportunities. I fell in love with the game. I was real young. My mom said she put the ball in my hands. I was like 2 or 3 years old, and I just never let it go. I got pictures, baby pictures of me, you know, on the goal. And, you know, I wish technology was as big as back then as now. You probably would have
seen it. Yeah.
But, yeah, so I just fell in love with the game early. And my dad was big on golf. I was really good at golf, apparently, according to my parents. And they said I could have been good at golf. But by the time I was age 9, I walked into my dad's office and I told him I was retiring, as if I had just had like a whole
8 years old, retiring from a sport. Nice.
Yeah. I retired from golf and became a full-time basketball, as if I wasn't already doing that pretty much. But I played a little bit of soccer growing up. But basketball was always my first love. And I just love the game and everything about it.
I got you. So let's talk about your high school career and where you played at.
High school? So high school, I went to 6 different high schools, actually.
Oh, 6?
Yeah, 6.
Yeah, you was a moving man, weren't you?
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, you really can't tell my high school story without kind of telling my, like, early life. And so just kind of for starters, you know, when I was about 2 or 3 years old, I suffered from a rare disease called Kawasaki that almost killed me, actually. They came down to a last dosage, and they said if the dosage of medicine didn't work, that I was going to die. And so they gave me the last dosage, and within about 48 hours, I was up like it was nothing, like nothing happened. So pretty much went from a deathbed to almost acting, like I said, like nothing happened. So had to get my heart checked for the first, like, 10 years after that. When I was 3 years old, I started having some, right around the same time I was suffering from Kawasaki, kind of back to back, I started having some really bad ear infections, and which actually led to hearing loss. So I had, I've lost 80% of my hearing in my left ear and 20% hearing in my right. So I started having to wear hearing aids when I was about 3 or 4 years old. And so that kind of set off, you know, just life to start off with was already kind of felt like stuff was already going back and forth. You know, so by the time I was like age 9, I just had a lot of stuff going on. I was kind of really angry at the world, kind of, you know, just dealing with that. And, you know, I had anxiety, real bad ADHD, behavioral issues, anger issues. I was clinically depressed by the time I was 9 years old. So just had a lot of stuff going on mentally from the get-go. I was sick a lot, too. Spent a lot of time in the hospital. My immune system was pretty weak. And missed a lot of school growing up. So needed definitely a lot of special attention from not just at home. My mom, you know, my dad worked a lot. So, but with school and stuff. And so with school, I was just like a straight A or A and B honor roll student up until about 4th or 5th grade. And that's when all like the learning stuff started to kick in, and just had a lot of stuff going on. So, I mean, long story short, going into high school, I got sent to boarding school. I went to boarding school actually before I even entered high school. They took me out of the 8th grade where I was at, and sent me to a wilderness program. Now, I agreed to it because there was a lot of stuff going on. I wasn't getting along with my parents. School was whatever it was, wasn't a good situation. So my parents, you know, I had been in therapy. My parents started me in therapy when I was in 3rd grade. And so they had allowed me to, you know, try to get better, but it just, throughout the years, it just became too much. And not only that, I went through a lot of loss. I lost my grandmother when I was 13. That really hit me hard. And my grandfather passed away 6 months later. And then my great aunt was actually murdered about 1.5 years after my grandmother passed away. Not only just murdered, my cousin killed her own son. And so that it was just a it was a lot.
Wrong thoughts.
Yeah, it was a lot. I mean, not only just 9, I was already thinking about suicide. So, I mean, 13, 14, 15 years old, just, you know, getting into your teenage years, being a teenager, you know, of course, me and you and others would know, you know, your mind is kind of all over the place. So I had that. Those things compared to what I was already going through and this growing up, it was rough. So my parents, you know, listened to therapists. They suggested I go to a therapeutic boarding schools and stuff like that. So I went to one in Utah. It was a wilderness program. We were in the wilderness. So we literally carried like 75, 85 pound backpacks. And at the time I was about 5'4", like 135. So the backpacks weighed over half. I did, you know, half the amount of weight that I was at the time. And so that was an interesting experience, but it really kind of helped my confidence. You know, I had a real low self-esteem outside of basketball. Basketball, even through all that I went through, like, I was one of the better guards in the state, you know, growing up. You know, I have a whole trophy case in my bedroom. Just, we used to run through teams, beating about 30, 40. People were scared of us. But, you know, just eventually, you know, all basketball players, you gotta be right, you know, as a person, right, you know, in your mind. And I think that's what a lot of players miss. They think it's just all about the game. And so, biggest thing with my parents is like my mom really especially wanted to focus on me, because she knew that no matter how good I was at basketball, if I didn't take care of the person first, all that stuff was gonna fall. So going into high school, 8th grade, like I said, you know, finished part of 8th grade at that wilderness program. Then I went to a boarding school camp in New Hampshire, which counted some of my, I got some high school credits from there. So my first official high school was Blue Ridge. It was all boys boarding school in Virginia. And we were actually ranked in the country. I played JV and varsity. Well, I practiced with varsity. I didn't necessarily play, but I was all conference on JV, team MVP, did my thing. It was a forced situation because I didn't want to be there, but I did good, you know, pretty solid. Then I wanted to come home. The therapists were talking about, oh, you should probably stay for another year, but I was like, no, I'm coming home. I want to have a normal life, you know, type of thing. And then came home, went to a school called Nolan Catholic, which was my dad's alma mater. Actually, my uncle was like all-time leading scorer there, was All-American there. So my last name was on the plaque before I even stepped into that school. So people had high expectations and stuff, but that ended up being a disaster. And I ended up finding myself right back in boarding school, therapeutic boarding school. But this one actually changed my life. Went there, really, really took care of his therapy stuff. Like, you know, just kind of, it was a really heavy therapeutic environment. And so no basketball, just straight therapy. You know, I could go outside and play, but it wasn't, you know, team stuff, obviously. So went through that, went to another boarding school in Utah just to finish some grades out and stuff like that. Kind of transitioned back home, came back home, went to a school called Fort Worth Christian and for junior and most of my senior year, and then actually had to leave Fort Worth Christian because they wouldn't let me graduate because I was missing a Spanish credit. In the state of Texas, you have to have 2 Spanish credits to graduate high school in most cases. And so unless there's, you have an exception. So without that second Spanish credit, so I ended up transferring back to the school district, the same school district I had left because of, I had so many issues there, and I'm going back and graduating. So yeah, that's my high school career. I went to 6 different high schools.
And you got a whole journey from high school to going to high school. Like, that's pretty tough on a child, like, at that age to have so much weight on his shoulders and let alone your head. I probably wouldn't even understand the madness if you had madness in your head. I'm assuming, like, to go through all that, a lot of traveling, different schools, 6 different schools, to be able to focus and still try to manage on the therapy, plus managing basketball as well to keep you at peace. I know that was a lot for you, like, in that period. So we'll come back to that in a little bit so we can talk more or something else we'll do with that conversation we just had right then. College was interesting for you too as well. So let's talk about that.
So college was, it was interesting, but, coming out of boarding school, I missed a couple years of AAU. So I kind of knew that I needed like an extra year to just kind of get my mind right. Like coming out of boarding school, you know, you're in boarding school the way I was, you're basically, it's almost like you're in jail. Like you're secluded from the rest of the world. We couldn't have any contact with anybody outside of our families. We couldn't talk to friends. And at least in jail, you could talk to friends. We couldn't talk to friends. So, literally, like I said, coming back home, you got to get readjusted to life and get readjusted. Boarding school became like a safe place. And so, like, you could be yourself, but you had to be appropriate and you had to be mindful of the people around you and be mindful of yourself. You know, you're all there trying to heal. I went to school with kids that had heroin addiction, girls that had, rape, domestic violence. I mean, wide range of issues that you normally, if you don't live right, you see it on the news. And it's like, it seemed like a foreign world, but I saw that stuff. So when I came home, I had to get readjusted. So for me, coming out of high school, I was like, I need an extra year to just kind of, keep this momentum of, getting used to everything, And so I wanted to go to a post-grad school. So I went to a post-grad school in Vegas called Impact Academy. Went there for a year just to get more college looks because I had missed so much time in AAU and high school. And then quite a few looks from all different levels. I left my prep school a little bit early to come home to see if I can put in some more work, try to, use my connections. And it worked out. I got several replies from different colleges and several schools were actually looking at me seriously and had several good conversations with people. And it was kind of unfortunate because many of the schools had already, their guy that they were looking at or they had offered. And I had at least 4 or 5 situations probably where they were like, well, if this guy doesn't commit, then we're going to, come back.
One of those you commit at him type of thing.
Yeah. This guy. Back burner type thing. And so, as much as I, whether or not those players end up being better than me, whatever the case may be, that's just what the situation was. And so I will say one of probably the mistakes that I made growing up, for me coming out of all the stuff that I've already been through, I wanted to go to the top. I wanted to play at the highest level. For me, it was like the perfect story, I guess you could say. Kid, overcame substantial odds to get to the top of college basketball, something I always dreamed of. And play at the highest level possible. So, like a lot of kids just want to go Division I. And so I don't blame myself for having those aspirations. I think I had every right to feel the way I felt, coming out of those situations, but definitely could have looked more into, other schools and stuff like that. So that's why when I mentor kids and stuff, I'm like, make sure that you want to go to the school that really, really wants you type thing. So, going through that situation, that recruiting process was hard. And so I ended up pretty much losing a lot of schools just because of the timing and stuff. And I had developed a friendship with Coach Dickey, Coach James Dickey, who was a former head coach at the University of Houston, which is my dad's alma mater. I went to University of Houston camp, struck a friendship with him, good guy, good coach. And, you know, I was thinking about walking on there, but my hard-headed self was kind of like, well, I'm going to go away from wherever my dad went, you know, just kind of doing whatever I want to do. Ironically, after saying I want to play Division I and then avoiding that type of situation. But what I didn't understand is that sometimes you don't have your choice. You got to go where, you know.
Right.
You like the game, you got to go where you got to go, you know. So I wound up, you know, choosing Oklahoma State, where Coach Dickey had resigned from University of Houston and went to coach at Oklahoma State. So kind of thinking, you know, maybe I could follow his, you know, footsteps there and maybe go try to walk on or something like that. And never wound up happening. I was just a student at Oklahoma State. But I stayed in the gym. I used to go to the rec center every single day. I had a reputation on campus. Like, I would take up half a court, do my work for an hour and a half, 2 hours, two and a half, 3 hours, whatever I felt like doing that day. And I just stayed in the gym, and several of the players on the team actually advocated for me to get on the team in Oklahoma State, went to the coaches and everything. I think more than half the team advocated for me, which is great to, you know, even, you know, it's great when your peers think highly of you, right? So despite all the efforts to try to help, you know, get me there, just something happened within me and Coach Dickey's relationship that I'm actually not sure of to this day. I don't know if it's personal or something happened, but it happened, and they didn't want me on the team, so just kind of went the way it went. And they didn't really give me a concrete answer to like the end of that next summer. Another coach called me and told me, you know, I don't know what happened, I don't know what's going on, but it's not going to work. So, you know, so I ended up having to kind of find a last minute solution, and just happened to be a kid that was younger than me that I trained with. His uncle was the, I think, vice president or vice principal of the junior college in Iowa, called Iowa Central Community College, and they sent my film off to the coaches. Coach called me the next day and said, hey, do you want to come? And I said, well, coach, I don't have any other option. I'm grateful for any opportunity that comes my way. And so I actually had a college, one of my boys was looking out for me, and they were like, you know, a junior college in Florida called me, and I was driving up to Iowa. I'm like, man, I could have gone to Florida instead of Iowa, but ended up going to Iowa. Ended up going to Iowa anyway. So that was an interesting experience. You know, kind of last minute recruiting, last minute, didn't really get a relationship with them like that. So I was just kind of learning on the fly, you know. So when I got up to Iowa, I came in and I was doing my thing, you know, even a year after not playing any organized basketball, I just felt like I hadn't lost it. But the coach had a specific kind of expectation for his point guard to play, and I didn't meet those expectations apparently. So I did well. So the JV, there was a JV and a varsity team. And the plan was for me to play JV to kind of get my feet wet a little bit, you know, then get up to varsity and stuff. And wound up being stuck on varsity pretty much the entire – I mean, I'm sorry, stuck on junior varsity the entire time. There were 22 kids in the program. I was the only one that never suited up for varsity, not even one time. My backup on JV even got to suit up for varsity over me. It was a pretty ridiculous situation, and several, obviously, once again, my peers, you know, should be up there, but obviously that's not their decision. So the coach, I just kind of lost a little bit of confidence in my game too. It was just like, you know, coaches kind of put something in your head. That's why I first learned about college ball, is like, you got to be really supremely confident in your skills and be hard-headed to a certain degree, because college coaches will try to put you in a box. And I kind of allowed them to do that and just kind of lost confidence in certain parts of my game that I came in just, you know, absolutely, you know, confident in. And I let them get to my head a little bit. And we had a little meeting in the middle of the year. And they told me that – the coach told me that I wasn't going to be moved up to varsity. So he didn't think I really – you know, I told him I wanted to play Division I and at the beginning of the year, but – yeah, he was just like kind of shut all that down. Just kind of told me, yeah, you're not good enough for that, you know, whatever else he said that day. And also got in trouble for something I posted on Facebook, ironically. So, you know, like, got each other on Facebook, but I went on the school's page, and somebody, they were joking about, you know, some like incoming student, not joking, the school, they posted something about incoming students, and I was in the comment section, and somebody, people were making jokes and stuff, and I made a joke saying, don't come here, something about jail, I don't even remember what I said, and the coach like, somebody like screenshotted it, sent it to the coach, and in like my little meeting, he hands me the paper and says, you know, and I'm like, I didn't even remember making that comment, but coach had been there for like 30 years, so he got all types of school pride, and he was pissed. Yeah, he said all types of stuff to me that day. That was kind of, yeah. So just remember going back to my dorm room, just upset, crying. Like, you know, I came in thinking, like, I want to play Division I. I'm going to get – I worked hard. I used to wake up at 5 a.m. And, you know, before practice, we had practice at 6. I'm in there at 5, you know, just working, doing my thing. And so I just – but I continued. I got a membership at the local YMCA and went in, once again, gained another reputation of being in there. The floors were so bad in the YMCA, I had to wipe them with a mop before I even work out. I did that for 4 months straight before I went home and went to – when I went home, it was like, you know, okay, let's figure this out. You know, I'm not done yet. And so the whole summer kind of went by and came down to about four schools that I was looking at, the University of Houston, Stephen F. Austin, Sam Houston State, and Texas State. And so prayed about it, just asked God to say, hey, you know what, close any door you want me to go through. And – I called those, you know, all the schools outside of University of Houston, and they all said that they didn't have a spot for me, and that's how I kind of end up at U of H. My dad had a little bit of connection with the school, so, I mean, he does with his position, kind of what he does with the school, and got a hold of the head coach, and I was able to get a meeting with some of the assistant coaches, and they just told me, you know, despite who my dad is in the school, you know, they weren't going to give me any type of easy ride, which I didn't want one because, you know, I want to forge my own path anyway. And they told me about the tryout, what to do. And that coaching staff had been there for, that was their third year, and they had never picked anybody out of those tryouts. I was the first one to get picked. And so I was on the team for about 40 days before they knew about my NCAA issue. The NCAA issue came from a high school, but so the second to last boarding school I went to wasn't accredited by the NCAA. This is all the, but I said the heroin addicts and stuff like that, drug abuse, girls and all that type of stuff. They had nobody out of that school even gets to that level that I was at or tries to do what I was trying to do. And so they had never even thought about trying to be accredited by the NCAA. So the very thing that saved my life was taking my biggest dream away. And so they had to, you know, they went through the process, but they got denied three times. Mm. They filed paperwork, got denied three times, and then I had to file for a waiver. And so I had to write a letter to the NCAA and stuff. And so the person that was helping me out with the academic, with the stuff with the NCAA, his name was Ted. Ted called the NCAA. This was 4 months after the fact. I had to stop practicing in November because of the conference rule. They said, if you're not qualified out of high school, you have to sit out from practice. NCAA said you have to sit out again, but you can practice. But the conference rule said opposite. So finally got it, you know, finally we were filing for the waiver. Ted called the NCAA, called the conference, told them my situation. They gave me the minimum clearance 4 months later, like 3 or 4 months later. By that time, it was the end of the season. The coach said, you know, Coach Sampson, Coach Kelvin Sampson, one of the best coaches ever, period. He was, you know, his son, Coach Kelvin Sampson, also a great coach. He told me, you know, Coach Sampson doesn't want, you know, any, you know, interruptions. It was like 5 games left in the season. They're making a run for the NCAA tournament.
Yeah.
You know, just back in the spring, right? So I came back in the spring, you know, in shape, like they told me to everything, but they recruited like 8 new guys, including Corey Davis and some other guys who ended up being really pivotal members on the team that won like 33 games like the next year. And so, the year after. But so they didn't want any more guards. And so they just kind of let me go. And so I didn't want to transfer for whatever reason. I could have transferred, it was going to be too late anyway. So I was – so towards the end of that year, though, I was looking at trying to transfer for my senior year so I could at least play 1 year of college basketball. And I wanted to I maintained a really good relationship with both Coach Sampson and especially Coach Kellen Sampson. I was really close to. So even still to this day. So he called Angelo State in San Angelo, Texas, Division II school. And I went on a visit. Liked it, but I just felt like it wasn't really the place for me. I probably didn't have a choice, but this is me just listening to myself and how I felt spiritually about the situation. So part of me just felt like I didn't need to leave Houston. And so then I ended up finding out one of my trainer back in Dallas knew an assistant coach who had just taken a job at Texas Southern, which is down the street from the University of Houston. I'm like, okay, cool. So I went and talked to them, and they offered me, long story short, they offered me a spot on the team. But I was still going through the getting into Texas Southern, that whole process. The biggest thing was for me graduating to get that degree. So, but Texas Southern kind of messed up my transcripts. I came in with like 103 credits. They counted like 40 of them. So I had to like go through that process. And by the end of the process, coach was just like, you know, you're going through way too much to try to do this. Just go back to University of Houston. So I went back to University of Houston, you know, pretty upset because I pretty much had the spot, you know, a breakthrough, and then once again just kind of slips right up from under me. And then I went and became actually not many people know this, I was a manager for the University of Houston basketball team for about a month and a half. And so I was dealing with some injuries and stuff from like that summer, and I finally got back in the gym, I randomly met this guy who had just moved to Houston from Chicago. He told me about the ABA tryout. I didn't even know the ABA was still a thing. I thought it would have been dissolved a long time ago. And so he told me about it, and he was like, you should go. I'm like, I'm nervous. I'm like, I like to be prepared. That's why I work hard. You know, so I haven't been in the gym that much in the last month. You know, so all right, well, whatever. Let's go see how it goes. Went, did okay. Got invited to the next practice. Did even better at the next practice because I had a whole week to, you know, try to get better or get, you know, get prepared. And they got me on the team. And then almost got cut, actually, after one game. Almost got cut. And they gave me one more game with pretty much my back up against the wall and scored 24 points. So that put me on the team pretty solid after that. I ended up starting, actually, being a starting point guard. So that was my senior year, and then actually a month after I made the team with the ABA, I became an intern for the Houston Rockets. That's where I got that internship, and then I graduated in May. So that was my college career.
And it was a journey, just like the high school one. So I was kind of feeling it, you know. So I'm getting it. So, like, you end up going to ABA playing. I know you was hurt. So this year you saying you're going to try to – You'll be on the contract this year after the health
injury. Yeah, I just signed with an agent about a month or so ago, and he's actually in town right now. We're supposed to be filming some stuff tomorrow, filming a workout, sending it to people and stuff like that. So we'll just see how it goes. It's actually my agent is the same guy he hosted the tour to Germany last August, so I know him pretty well, and so we're just looking forward to the best opportunity that comes my way.
So you pretty much summed everything up where I didn't have to do as much. So pretty much laid it out, which was perfect because you broke every detail out right here. So I got one more thing, man. This is the final question for all my sports. What would you tell kids or people who's trying to do the same thing or aspire to play the next level? What would you tell them? Because you went through a lot, and how would they be able to avoid the traps and the things that you went through?
Well, the biggest thing is, I would tell kids, first of all, make sure you are straight. Like, your mental health, your desires. Make sure you have conviction about what you're trying to do, because no matter how you try to go through this process, you're going to run through a ton of adversity one way or another. And basketball is a tough game. It's political. There's a lot of different things. There's a lot of different people with different agendas, and you have to be careful who you trust. But as long as you're strong within yourself, you know, you should be able to navigate through a lot of different things. And it teaches you a lot about life, not just in between those four lines, but just dealing with the sport of basketball in general and how you know, how far the game can take you or not far at all. And so that's the biggest thing that I would say. I would start with them as a person. The second thing I would say is your butt better be in that gym, because it's something when you're not working, somebody else is. And it doesn't always have to be in the gym. Getting better at basketball means studying the game, studying the history, knowing different things about the game. You know, you don't have to rely on team basketball or coaches to teach you. You have the internet, which is very easily accessible to a wealth of knowledge on just about anything, but especially basketball, obviously, is what we're talking about. Study the game, learn the game, work out, train, take care of your body, do all the things that are necessary, because, you know, you just never know when it could come down between you and one person. It's what separates you. And so, you know, those are the two biggest things that I would say. You know, if you want to make it far in basketball, if you want to overcome the adversity that's going to come with it, is that you have to make sure that, like I said, A, you have to have a good head on your shoulders, because a bad head on your shoulders will get you kicked out the game. There's too many talented players who have bad attitudes or issues, things like that. And like, you need to be good, because I've seen guys who are less talented, you know, make it over guys who weren't as talented. I mean, were more talented just because the coach could trust you. So have your grades together. Make sure you respect your coaches, respect your trainers, respect the people who are trying to help you. Listen to them. And then also be able to discern for yourself what's right and what's wrong. And understand that not everybody has your best interest in being able to discern what's the right thing to do in each and every situation. And you're never going to make the right – you're never going to always make 100% the right, you know, decision, you know, and be around the right people all the time. But, you know, understanding that as long as you put in the work and you love the game and you love the game enough to keep putting in that work, it'll work out.
Indeed. People, there you have it. We have raw thoughts from Brendan McKelvey. And he gave us a lot. All I'm saying is my raw thoughts of this is never give up, no matter your trials and tribulations. He went through a lot from his age, once he came into the world, to 13 traveling there with, to college traveling there with, to end up in a position to still be able to play professional basketball overseas. So it's all in what you want and how you make it. That's all, folks. Right here, raw thoughts of Brendan McKelvey. McKelvey, I appreciate you being on the show today, tonight, whatever time somebody's looking at this. So, but for us tonight, I appreciate you so much.
No, I appreciate you wanting to interview me. Definitely, definitely a blessing to tell my story. Like I said, I'm working on a documentary. Documentary is called Built Around God. Should be coming out sometime here in 2020. So definitely be on the lookout for that. I'll tag you in and everything and send it to you. So making sure that our biggest thing is I want to inspire the world. I want to inspire kids after me and just want everybody to understand, you know, adversity is part of life. And if you have your faith, if you have yourself, and you got family, you got people supporting you, you know, just make sure that, you know, you understand that you can impact the next person, because it's never about you. It's always about, you know, the next person, how you can make someone else better. True greatness breeds greatness. If you think you're great, but nobody else is great around you, that's a problem. So that's what I'm trying to do for the world.
That's all, folks. You guys have a great day, great night, great morning, whatever time you watch. Amen.